Ben Carby, Pad to Care Reg from BHRUT, and this week we have a special episode for Dying Matters Awareness Week. I have with me Claire Bates, our consultant and clinical lead, Heather Wright, our team lead, and special guest, our new honorary chaplain, Mark Mead, who's also a bit of an expert in IT. Okay, so Heather, if you could kick us off and tell us, what is Dying Matters Awareness Week?
Hi everyone. Yes, so Dying Matters Awareness Week is a week where we really concentrate on raising the awareness around anything to do with death and dying. This has been going on for a number of years, and at the Trust we've been supporting this for the last 5 years. This year the theme is, what does it mean to be in a good place to die? Interestingly, 10% of people have unexpected deaths, and 90% of people have an expected death. So there really is an opportunity for us to prepare people for dying, but it's really important that it's everybody's business, and everybody has to have some awareness around Dying Matters Week, because they can really, really help our patients and families be prepared for their death.
I mean, at the end of the day, we all know death is a certainty, and as you say, in the vast majority, we can make preparation for it. And I think one of the obvious sort of things to jump out from the theme this year is, you know, the physical location of where is a good place to die, and that may be home, hospital, hospice, and planning in advance with advanced care plans, coordinate my care records. We have a whole separate episode on that, so do go and listen to that. But today we want to explore some of the maybe slightly less obvious aspects. So how's about the emotional aspects of dying for the individual and the family?
Yeah, so I've had the privilege to be part of many patients the last few days of life, and often they're scared. Some people are relieved actually that they're dying because they've been in pain for a long time. But I really want to tell you about a particular case which stays quite close to my heart, and it just shows you what you can really do to make a difference for these patients. So this is a 42-year-old lady who had breast cancer that had spread to pretty much all of her body, and she'd been in and out of hospital for a number of times. And actually, I hadn't known her for very long, and maybe that made it a little bit easier for me to do what I'm about to tell you. So I was asked to see her because she'd been keeping a journal about her journey through her cancer that she wanted to give to her husband after she died. But there was a really painful part of that journey that she needed to prepare her two young sons to do this. So I had, as I said, the absolute privilege to be able to write letters to her two sons. I think they were about 5 and 7 in age. And this was really important that she wanted to tell them something about what she felt about them and what they meant to her. While we were doing it, there was tears. There was a lot of laughter. She had certain songs that she wanted them to remember, or that she used to sing them. So I just made it quite clear at the beginning that me and her, we're going to have this kind of experience together that was going to have tears and laughter, but that was okay. And actually, we kind of supported each other through it. I felt an absolute honour after she died to be able to be part of that journal to give to her husband. And those letters, and actually it would be really nice to be a fly on the wall when her sons open those letters in years to come. So she really felt that she was part of that preparation for her death. It's not always easy to do that, but I felt it was really rewarding.
It takes such courage, doesn't it,
yeah,
for someone to do that. And so I think what we're trying to say is that being in a good place to die isn't just about the physical preparations, it's about the relational preparations, and if you've got the strength and the will to do it, and someone like you, Heather, to help, it's such a good thing to do.
Yeah, and we've got those treasured memory boxes and things that we use at BHRUT to help support families with that as well. And then talking about sort of leaving other things behind, another thing highlighted by the Dying Matters Awareness Week team is leaving behind sort of a digital legacy. So the stats are apparently in 20 to 30 years time, the dead will outnumber the living on Facebook, and at the moment in the UK you can't bequeath digital legacies in your will. So we've got Mark who is a bit of an expert in the area and can tell us a bit more about this.
Yes, hello. Part of my day job, in addition to chaplaincy, is building websites. And we've had a lot of experience with people leaving behind their digital profile. And it's fascinating to see kind of the joys this can bring, sometimes the hardships this can bring for beloved ones. And we strongly recommend to all of our customers and to everyone to just to leave the password for these digital accounts with someone you trust, because they may choose that actually it may be beneficial to pull down your profile or to notify Facebook or Twitter or the others of your demise. And therefore, having these passwords just makes it much easier for your family to do this. And I think it's also important for family members to remember that actually these digital profiles are just a snippet of someone's life. It's not all of it. And they're just as an aid of remembering the good times.
And there's an independent resource out there called Dead Social, which gives some advice on how you can sort of leave behind instructions for friends and family to, you know, so they know what you would like done with your account after you die.
One of the experts I heard talk about this suggested that a good thing to do in life is to regularly clean up your digital house, so to kind of go through your different social media profiles, your photos, and actually just kind of regularly clean up your digital life. I mean, that's also about being in a good place to die, isn't it? It's that, you know, in the same way that you might prepare your house and write your will and your kind of practical belongings, that you would also do that with your digital content. So,
yeah. And then sort of moving on to wills that we're more familiar with, the financial and practical aspects, including funeral plans. So we had a quick poll in terms of how many of us in the room have actually made a will. So I must admit I haven't. and only a couple of us have. And equally, some of us have made funeral plans, but then, you know, not done the other bit. And one of the stats we've also heard earlier this week was that 10% of us will die before the age of 60. So, you know, it's very easy to sort of think that we'll live forever and we don't have to think about that for a very long time, but it helps so much to be prepared and to take that pressure off of relatives left behind.
Why do you think it is, I'm asking generally, like, why is it that we don't make wills, we don't do those things? I mean, not to name any names, but those of us who haven't done one, like, why hasn't it happened?
So I think there's many different reasons why we haven't written wills. I think for me personally, it's that I'm not sure who I want to set to share all my money with or my assets with. But it is something that I preach about to others, so I really need to get my finger out and do it. But I think also sometimes just time and actually writing it, you know, because it's quite a lengthy document to do if you've got complex wills. But then on the other hand, it can be very easy. Yeah. And I know that in my experience with patients, that's one of the things that they really worry about when they're nearing the end of their life and they haven't done it. So it's far better to do it much in advance when you're not in that emotional state.
And is it fair to say as well that if you're a single person, it's much less obvious who your property and your estate goes to, as if you're married and your spouse survives you, then that's much more straightforward. Yeah. I must admit, in our house, we're now on our second or third iteration of our wills, because as life goes on, things change and the people that you want to bequeath to.
Interestingly, my wife and I put in our will the plan for what would happen to our children in the event of both of us dying. Because you may be in a car crash and it takes you out, and you need to make sure your children are safely looked after rather than going through a system that you choose not to.
Yeah, and I think thinking about a will is thinking about mortality, isn't it? And some people are anxious about facing that reality. But this is also part of Dying Matters Awareness, is, you know, we should be talking about this, removing the stigma and just making it a part of normal conversations and life plans, really. Okay, and so finally, moving on to spirituality and, you know, how we can cope with those needs to make sure that people and families are in a good place to die.
So as a chaplain, in my experience, those of faith and of none can find this time quite challenging on their belief systems and what they've experienced through their lives. And it's a good time for people to ask questions. When I have spent time with patients and in those lovely moments with them, we often reflect on the positives that have happened through their life. And if they do have a faith, explore what they believe God has done for them, because it reaffirms to them their faith and their core values. And I also spend time reminding them of the words in Psalms 23, and in verse 6 it says, "Surely your goodness and your love will follow me all the days of my life." And David's referring to God's love for us as people. And he finishes it off by saying, "And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And like those who are at that point and are scared of the process that's going to happen, we people of faith, Christians, Muslims, Jewish, Hindus, Buddhisms, and all of them, believe this is not the end, but the continuation of a new journey.
That's what I was going to pick up on, Mark, that actually, I think for pretty much all faiths, as I understand it, that death is not the end, and that there would be a sense of the way that you live is to live with death in mind, and what that means to live well, that you need to kind of be thinking almost of your mortality to live well in the here and now. So, such an important aspect of life.
Definitely, and I was just going to say that actually, if we look back at near the times of Jesus, when death occurred, they saw it as a birthday, and they used to celebrate your birth and your kind of ascension into another place, or to heaven, or reincarnation, as others believe.
On the flip side, I don't believe in a life after death, but I do believe that, you know, when we die, what we do leave behind is sort of, I've described it as like ripples in a pond, where, you know, your stone has fallen to the bottom and you've left, but all of your actions, the things that you've put out there, still kind of reverberate in some way around the world and the people around you. So having the opportunity to round off anything, and I've sort of heard that dying, you know, really to the individual, it's about saying your I love yous, your thank yous, your sorries and your goodbyes. And so I think all of these aspects help to, you know, tie off anything that, you know, just reach that conclusion to your story and to leave you in a state of peace and therefore in a good place to die.
So good.
Great. So hopefully we've given you a good overview of what that means in terms of a good death, and also trying to keep the conversation going in various aspects day to day, not just this week, about dying and how we can all prepare ourselves and each other for that. Thank you very much.